Random House Audio presents Free Falling As If in a Dream, The Story of a Crime by Leif G.W. Parson. Translated from the Swedish by Paul Norlin. Read for you by Eric Davies. To Mikael and the Bear. Regardless of whether truth is absolute or relative, and quite apart from the fact that many of us constantly seek it, in the end it is still hidden from almost all of us. As a rule, out of necessity, and if for no other reason, out of concern for those who wouldn't understand anyway. There is no law of public access with regard to the truth. We have a practical problem that we have to solve, and it's no more difficult than that. The Professor. Wednesday, October 10. The harbor in Puerto Poyenza on North Mallorca. Just before 7 o'clock in the morning, Esperanza left her usual place at the charter pier in the harbor. A beautiful little boat with a beautiful name. Chapter 1. 8 weeks earlier, Wednesday, August 15. Headquarters of the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation on Kungsholmen in Stockholm.
Olof Palme,
said the chief of the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation, Lars Martin Johansson.
Are you familiar with that name, ladies and gentlemen?
For some reason, he seemed almost joyful as he said it. Just back from vacation with a becoming suntan, red suspenders, and linen shirt with no tie as a lighthearted signal of the transition from relaxation to responsibility. He leaned forward in his seat at the short end of the conference table, letting his gaze wander across the four others gathered around the same table. The joy seemed to be his alone. Doubtful looks were exchanged among three of the four: Police Superintendent Anna Holt, Detective Chief Inspector Jan Levine, and Detective Chief Inspector Lisa Mate, while the fourth in the group, Chief Inspector Yngve Flücht, who was head of the Palma group, seemed, if anything, embarrassed by the question and tried to compensate by looking politely preoccupied.
Olof Palme,
Johansson repeated, his voice now sounding more urgent.
Does that ring any bells?
The one who finally answered was Lisa Mate, the youngest of the group, but long accustomed to the role of best in class. First, she glanced at the head of the Palma investigation, who only nodded and looked tired. Then she looked down at her notepad, which incidentally was free of any notes or the doodling with which she usually filled it, whatever was being discussed. Then, in two sentences, she summarized Olof Palme's political career, and in four sentences, his end.
Olof Palme, said Mate,
social democrat and Sweden's most well-known politician during the post-war period. Prime Minister for 2 terms, from 1969 to 1976, and from 1982 to 1986, was murdered at the intersection of Sveavägen and Tunnelgatan in central Stockholm 21 years, 5 months, and 14 days ago. It was Friday, the 28th of February, 1986, 20 minutes past 11. He was shot from behind with one shot and appears to have died almost immediately. I was 11 years old when it happened, so I'm afraid I don't have much more to contribute, Mate concluded.
Don't say that, said Johansson with a Norland drawl. Our victim was the Prime Minister and a fine fellow. And how common is this kind of crime victim at this sort of place? True, I'm only the head of the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation, but I'm also an orderly person and extremely allergic to unsolved cases, he continued. I take them personally, if you're wondering why you're here.
No one had wondered about that. No one seemed particularly enthusiastic either. Regardless, the whole thing started as it almost always does, with a few police officers sitting around a table talking about a case. No flashing lights, no sirens, and definitely no drawn service revolvers. Although when the crime happened over 20 years ago, it had started with flashing lights, sirens, and drawn service revolvers. Nothing had helped. The case had ended badly. Johansson elaborated on his ideas about what ought to be done, the motive for doing it, and how it should all be arranged in practical terms. As so often before, he also relied on his personal experience without the slightest trace of either genuine or false modesty. In my personal experience, when a case has come to a standstill, so to speak, it's often worth calling in some new folks who can look at the case with fresh eyes. It's easy to overlook things, said Johansson. I hear you, Anna Holt answered, sounding more sarcastic than she intended. But if you'll excuse... Sure, Johansson interrupted. But just let me finish my sentence first. I'm listening, said Holt. I never learn, she thought. When you're starting to get up in years like me, unfortunately the risk increases that you don't remember what you meant to say, if you get interrupted, that is, Johansson explained. Where was I now? He continued. How you intended to organize the whole thing, boss, Matei interjected. Our investigation, that is, she clarified. Thanks, Lisa, said Johansson. Thanks for helping an old man. How does he do it? Thought Holt. Even with Lisa, of all people. According to Johansson, it was not a question of forming a new Palma investigation, and the investigators who were already in the Palma group, several of whom had spent almost their entire active time as detectives there, would of course retain sole responsibility. So I want to make that clear from the start, Yngve, said Johansson, nodding at the head of the Palma group, who still seemed more worried than relieved. No way, said Johansson. You can forget any such ideas. I've imagined something a lot simpler and more informal. What I want simply is a second opinion, not a new investigation, just a second opinion from a few wise officers who can look at the case with fresh eyes. I want you to go through the investigation, he continued. Is there anything we haven't done that we should have done? Is there anything in the material itself that we've missed and that's worth looking into? That can still be looked into. If so, I want to know about it. And it's no more difficult than that. Regardless of his hopes on the last point, the following hour was devoted to discussing objections from three of the four others in the room. The only one who didn't say anything was Lisa Matei, but when their meeting was over, her notepad was as full of scribbling as always. Partly with what her colleagues had said, partly with her usual doodling regardless of what was being said. First up was Chief Inspector Jan Levine, who, after some introductory, cautious throat-clearing, quickly zeroed in on Johansson's fundamental motive, namely, the need for fresh eyes. The idea as such was excellent. He himself had advocated it often enough, not least during his time as head of the group that dealt with so-called cold cases. But for that very reason, he thought he was particularly poorly suited for this case. During the initial year of the investigation, while Levine was working at the homicide squad in Stockholm, he had primary responsibility for the collection of significant portions of the material evidence. Not until the investigation was taken over by the National Bureau did he return to his old assignment at the homicide squad in Stockholm.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?